I know it's important. I do. I honestly do. But we talking about practice, man. What are we talking about? Practice?
All right. Well, today, guys, I'm so thrilled to welcome Tyson Beck to Hoops and Cards here at the Basketball Forever Podcast Network. Tyson, how's it going, man?
I'm going well, Gary. Pleasure to be here. How about yourself? How are you going?
I'm doing well. I'm glad that the Cleveland Cavaliers are actually winning without LeBron. So I'm enjoying, you know, we are less than an hour away from Cleveland. So that's where our podcast kind of hails from and talks about cards. So yeah, man, doing well. I am. Nice. And as you know, I'm honored that we're a part of the Basketball Forever Podcast Network and excited to hear about your connection and involvement that way. From what I understand, like, you're co-founder of the Forever Network, really. That's one of the branches is Basketball Forever. So thanks so much for what you do to spread the love of the game, the love of basketball around the world, man. We appreciate it.
Oh, no. Yeah, most welcome. It's cool to have a basketball trading card specific podcast under the network. And yeah, it's, I mean, but I believe basketball is the most fun, best sport and to follow and play and everything. I absolutely love it. So yeah.
Well, and here's the thing, like, a lot of us may have heard your name or seen some of your designs with Tops and other cards. And, you know, like I mentioned before we started recording, I kind of went through all of your Instagram posts and saw so much NBA, like so much Iverson, Curry, Kobe, like, to see you're a fan. I love hearing that. Like, tell me a little bit about how you fell in love with basketball.
How I fell in love about basketball. Yeah. Probably
American basketball, even, like,
American,
right?
Basketball,
NBA.
Yeah. So NBA. Well, actually, I didn't even like, I played like football here, which is like Australian rules. It's not gridiron or NFL or whatever here. And just one time I went to a friend's house and there was a PlayStation game called, I think it was NBA Live 96. And I didn't even like basketball before then. And I played it and I got hooked on it. Like, I don't know why. I love playing the video game so much. And then the next year for Christmas, you know, I asked my parents, I got to get the next NBA game. And I think it was NBA 99. And I had to pick a team, and like Chicago, I think, or maybe it was 98, I can't remember, but it was like Chicago was the number one rated team. And I was like, I can't pick the number one rated team. I'll go with the second best team. And that in the rankings, and it was Utah. And I was like, I don't like their logo. And I'll go the third team, and it was the Lakers. And then that's just how I picked the Lakers as my team. And so, which isn't a crazy story, but I got super lucky because, you know, obviously going for the Lakers in 99, they ended up winning three consecutive championships. And I was like, right. How easy is this? But ever since then, I've been hooked. Like, basketball is my life. I mean, that's the saying, go, ball is life. Like, I've been hooked on it ever since. It's actually crazy to think that just playing that video game at a friend's house once actually changed my life, and has impacted my life so greatly. Cause I guess it's not only my hobby, it's my professional life as well now. So it's insane.
I love it. And I'm so glad you picked the Lakers and not like the Vancouver Grizzlies or, you know, some other team. And you're like, man, this is boring. You picked a good team.
I know. I was so close to picking Utah because I wanted a good team, but not the best team. So I was going to go number two, and I'm happy I didn't do Utah. No disrespect to Utah, but they're just one of those teams that are already always around the mark of the playoffs, but never really do anything once they're in there.
Right. Well, so your love of NBA, I love hearing a bit of your origin story, but also as a designer, artist, like speaking into and influencing culture as well. Like, how, at what point did you say, hey, man, I want to start doing some NBA, some basketball, because your design work is incredible.
Oh, I really do appreciate that. Thank you. I was, when I was in high school, I was at that point, it's like year 10. And then they start to set, you know, over here in the high school, it's year 10, 11, and 12 is the final 3 years. And year 10, they kind of go up to you and go like, you know, you got to start planning year 11 and 12. You got to pick your courses. What are you good at? What do you like doing? And I was just like, I don't like, I'm good at maths. It's the only subject I'm good at school, but I don't like it. The only thing I like is basketball. But I'm not like that. I'm not good at it. Like I can never be a professional athlete. So, and they were like, well, what, like, what do you like? Good. And I was just like, oh, well, I'm art class. I'm good at, but I don't actually enjoy it. Design class. I'm good at, I actually don't enjoy it, but it's like the one thing. And I don't know, it's like a spark or something. I was like, well, I like basketball and I'm good at design and art. Why don't I merge the two together? And then actually do something that, because I didn't, art and design classes suck. Like we were just like, you know, drawing flowers and doing like, you know, just like, you know, just things that didn't interest me, but I kind of was doing pretty good at it. And I just combined the two together. I hopped online, forums back in the day. This is like 2005 and people wanted like avatars and signatures. And they'll be right. Like, I'll go on a forum and they'll be like, oh, make me a, I don't know, Marcus Camby, like, you know, a Denver fan. I'm like, oh, cool. And I just make someone a signature and I just post it. And then I started posting wallpapers and all that was like 2005. And I used to just have put my name in the bottom of the corner of like, anyone that's younger probably don't even know what a forum is, but I just had my name on the signatures and the wallpapers and stuff. And then it quickly accelerated because back then, not many people were doing it. Like there really wasn't. Mm. Now there's a massive sports design community. There's like thousands of people that do it and they're so talented and everything. But back then there was like no one doing it. It was very untapped, like a niche market. So I guess I was one of the trailblazers that started it. And then pretty much all the work came to me because there really wasn't many people doing it, especially from like a external, like a freelancer point of view. And like I remember I was like, I had three like goals, like, or I had, three goals I wanted to do. I was like, I want to work for, do design work for the Lakers one day, Kobe Bryant and the NBA. And like, and I was working with the Lakers in 2007 when I was 18 years old.
Oh, doing, wow.
Yeah. And then Kobe was a few years later and then the NBA hired me. I worked for them for 8 years under retainer, doing all their digital marketing, digital assets, for like All-Star weekends, NBA finals, player, everything you saw on social media for 8 years was pretty much 90% was done through me. It was insane. And, it's kind of crazy. Just all from where it started of just enjoying basketball, but finding out that maybe design and art was the way that I could stay involved in Basel without playing it.
Yeah. Well, I have so many questions now. Like how did you initially get connected with the NBA in that capacity? Cause that had to be like an unforgettable moment in your life, a game changer really.
Yeah. I did kind of, I didn't dive into too many details of it. There's been so much that's been done, but I just kind of did a broad overview. I mean, the Lakers thing, there was a magazine cover contest, or it would have been 2006, maybe 2007. And like the Lakers and the Suns were like rivals then. That was when like, you know, Rajah Bell was clotheslining Kobe. Those were the back-to-back playoff series, in the first round. Phoenix and Lakers just did not get along. And I won a competition to have my artwork of Steve Nash on the front cover of this magazine, this Phoenix Suns magazine. And inside it, they asked for a bio on the artist. And, you know, one of the questions was favorite player and favorite team. And I said, favorite player, Kobe Bryant, favorite team was essentially Lakers. And they said, look, we're happy to put your artwork on the cover, but we cannot publish that. And I was like, oh, okay. Like, but they were, and then they said, look, instead of publishing that, we will send the Lakers, I don't know, digital or marketing team, whatever it is, your portfolio. And I was like, yeah, cool. That sounds good.
Yes, please. Yeah.
Yeah. And then that's how that happened. So it's funny, like, it's just an odd story, I guess. So it was like my name, my favorite player and favorite team not being in a magazine ended up leading me to contract work with the Lakers. And that was, I think I did like two, maybe three seasons with them. And for the NBA, I mean, I used to just push content out, like just as a fan, like, and I think that's like teams and leagues and agencies and stuff are pretty smart. They, you know, they saw my stuff, and I'm coming from like a fan's perspective, and like, I guess they could see that I was knowing what I was talking about when I'm posting content, posting design, like I just make stuff for fun. But then I'd post client at work as well. And I literally just got an anonymous email from the NBA. I think it was 2014. And they said, it was 2014 coming into their season. They said, hey, we're seeing, you know, your stuff on Instagram. Do you want to design like a graphic for the NBA to announce the upcoming season? And I said, first of all, I said, well, like, is this fake? Because like it was just a very Yeah, but it was just like a very like low key email. It's just like, yeah, seeing your stuff looks good. Do you want to do a graphic for us? I was just like, oh, okay. Just didn't seem real. So once I verified it was real, I was on board. And what I didn't know, the NBA was super smart. What they did was they actually got 30 design. They actually picked 30 designers, artists around the world. And they made, no, sorry, it wasn't 30. It was less. Sorry, it was, I think 15, and everyone made two graphics. That was it. Everyone made two graphics. They gave a few players the direction and everything of what to do to announce. I think it was like everybody up or something. It was like a slogan for the season, whatever it was. And everyone made something. And then what they actually did without telling anyone, I haven't been on Reddit, so I didn't see it until I heard about it later. Is they actually went to Reddit, the NBA Reddit, and said, here's the 15 or something posters for the upcoming season, pick which one's your favorites. And what they did was we got paid for the work, but then what they did was I think it was the top three or the top four people were voted for, which they didn't, and it was good they didn't tell us, because then we would just send our people to vote it up and all that. We had no idea this was happening.
That's true.
And then they came back with a contract to work with them for the entire season. So fortunately, mine was one of the ones selected. And then they came back and said, like, they didn't tell me what happened. Like, yours was voted. It was just like, it was only after speaking to them, like in years past, like, oh, you know, it was just conversation. They're like, that's what happened. I was like, oh, that's cool. How that they actually had that idea. Fortunately, I was selected, and that was the 2014 season. And then I worked for the next 8 years with them. And I don't really do work with them now. I do work with NBA Canada. It was wild. As fun as it sounds, it was a lot of hard work, a lot of pulling out hair, late nights, early mornings. Mm-hmm. I mean, as you know, NBA is literally like a 365 day. Something is going on. There's no off season.
There is no off season.
No, it goes from the finals to the draft straight away, and then something.
Yeah, it helps that it's a passion project for you. Like, you obviously love the game. You love art and bringing it to life in different ways. In fact, you guys listening, make sure you check out at Tyson Beck on Instagram. Check out this guy's artwork. Scroll back like I did. Look at 2012, 2013, 2014. If you're a fan of the NBA, you can't help but love the life and the energy and the creativity that you put into all this. And I also love knowing that at some point, this crossed over into actual sports card design for you. And yeah. And that's where, like, we have, you know, the whole range of basketball, from collectors that just love having basketball cards to investors who are looking to get the limited edition autograph, you know, latest release, those kinds of things. But at some point, you developed a heart or a passion for sports cards. And I'd love to hear maybe how it took that turn for you.
Yeah. So for me, I grew up collecting trading cards as a kid. I remember my first trip to America in 2000. I was given like an allowance from my parents to, like, you know, buy things in America. And I'm pretty sure 90% of it went to trading cards. And just buying a bunch of like just I don't even know what I was buying. Like, I guess there was no, especially in Australia, I don't know if I was buying crap or good, but I assume I was buying crap, but whatever. It was just cool. I liked the 90s cards. For me, I guess even when I was young, I always had like a design eye. I liked visual things. I hated reading books. I was a very visual person. I really liked the 90s cards. Just cool. Just that whole vibe of them. They were cool. And opening them up, that was, you know, trying to just get like the players. Like, obviously, I was hoping to get Kobe or Shaq. And I was able to get a few. And then what I would do is it was trading card store in my local city. I'd just pick up singles later on. Like, I'd pick up Lamar Odom cards, Derek Fisher, Kobe, just players that I like. I wouldn't really buy packs and boxes and stuff. I would just look at cards that I like and buy what I like. And then I guess it was at the same time that I was becoming doing design work and stuff, I guess that I was creating myself. I actually distanced myself from trading cards because I just kind of like, I don't know. It was like my style of design and art was very different to the trading cards, especially at that time, like in the mid 2000s. I guess it became more like most cards templated. There weren't like crazy inserts like in the 90s. And for me, I just kind of fell out of love of it. I was just like, oh, like I wouldn't make something that looks like this. So I don't know. I just kind of feel like I can't buy it. It was a little different because a lot of people aren't designers or artists, and they just like, they might resonate with something, but I don't, sort of thing. And it was just at that time of growing up. So I kind of fell out. And then what happened was in 2014, it was the same thing as the NBA. Like, I just got a random email from Top saying, hey, you know, we've seen your stuff on Instagram. It looks cool. We're wondering how it would look on a card. And I was just like, yeah, this is cool. Cause when I've always wanted to design trading cards and, and it was good because they were approaching me, looking at my stuff and wanting me to make stuff like my stuff, not like put me in a box. So it was really cool. Yeah. Which they, you know, I respect them. They had a great vision for that. And the first product I did was called Tots Fire Football 2014. And that was the first, and that was like an NFL set. And I did that. That was crazy because it was like a whole box, and I guess it was the first time. So, you know, yeah, it's certainly not my best work, but like I look at it as some of my favorite work because it's my first cards ever. Like, it's cool. Like, that, it has a story behind it to me. And then over that journey, I did a bunch of baseball cards, more football cards with Tops and everything. And I'd done one set of Kobe cards with Panini. It's called like Hero Villain, I think it is, something like that. I think it was in Kobe's last season. But that's the only like NBA cards that I've done. And then more recently in 2020, I guess what happened was like I've built up like, I guess, a lot of connections, a lot of following and in this sports industry. In 2020, when like COVID happened, pretty much like in the blink of an eye, like all my freelance work just stopped because sports stopped. And I was just like, oh, okay. Like, for me, I didn't really care because I was like, you know what, I've been going so hard for 6-7 years, I need a break. So this is like a forced break. But as things started to return, I think a lot of, and it's completely fine, a lot of like leagues, teams or whatever, they were looking after like internal employees first rather than like freelancers, remote people like me, because obviously like there was no one knew what was going on, like, you know, at that time, like this was before people were getting handouts and everything. So I was just like, oh, I gotta pivot, this is a great opportunity for me to start doing something else. And I looked at cards and, you know, I was doing some Tops cards and it was selling well at the time. And I was like, well, what's like, why don't I just do my own cards and direct with the athletes? Obviously, I don't use any of the licensing of like the NBA, NFL, whatever, all the league, like I don't have, like, obviously there's a monopoly in that, so I can't get into that. But I thought I can work with the athletes directly and do athlete cards, and then that's kind of how it happened. It was just I took the risk. I had to bet on myself, because, like, I mean, these athletes, you know, that they obviously demand a lot of money. Well, not demand, sorry, but they it costs a lot of money to sign them up and get a deal going, and it's all up front. And, you know, as an individual, I don't have like investors and big backing behind me, so it was pretty scary at the time. But I was like, well, it's time for a change. You know, I felt like it was something the industry kind of needed, because at the time there was redemptions, sticker autos, all this craziness, and I was like, nah, like I got to do this right. Let's you know, on card only, you know, some really unique designs, like not templated. And yeah, that's kind of how the vision was. And it's been a pretty wild journey ever since starting that in 2020.
Yeah, I think one of the best parts or byproducts of the pandemic and all the ways that shut us down was it pushed, like, sounds like in your case, gave you a nudge to go out on your own, to be an entrepreneur, and to take some risky steps, like you said, and do something different. But you're right, man, the basketball card market in the 2000s, the cards were boring, basic looking, like they weren't very attractive. I mean, I feel bad too, because some of the rookies that came out during those years, LeBron James, Steph Curry, James Harden, like the basic Steph Topps rookie is just dude in a white t-shirt.
Yeah.
Like, I'm gonna overpay for that epic card because it's Steph Curry, but still, like, you can tell since about 2012, 2013, more money, more brands, more artists, more inserts, more parallels, more technology, all those things. All that to say, like, I'm so glad you jumped in and got connected with the NBA that way, and with Topps. I think it was with Topps where I first heard your name, and probably a lot of us with Project 2020. Yeah.
That was a crazy time. Yeah.
I bet. And so now to be, you know, I'm on your mailing list, so I get updates when there's new releases. And so your new cards, like Allen Iverson and the Steph Curry Championship Series, your Kobe Bryant stuff. Like, I would love for you to just give us as listeners and card collectors kind of an overview, because I think there will be more artists that follow that trail and say, hey, look, it's a all access world right now. Like, you can go and download a podcast from anybody, or you can create and market yourself and have connections that you're not waiting on licensing, or you're not waiting on a certain deal or not. If you're willing to get out there and do something, and it's quality, like it's going to get discovered, you know what I'm saying? And people are going to love it. So I'd love to hear, like, what you've got going now, and maybe how you think that fits into the overall, like, world of sports cards.
I mean, I feel like it's like what I'm doing is still a very niche market. And I'd never want it to grow much more. I like it niche. I like keeping it small print. Like, even my base cards now are like limited to 100, sometimes less. I like keeping it really small. I mean, long term, I think, you know, there might be a potential where, like, in 2025, 2026, I can maybe put my brand underneath Fanatics and Topps and start doing license NBA cards, and I don't have to worry about paying for players' likeness and all that stuff, because at the moment I have to, you know, obviously, you know, to sell things legally, I have to get athletes' likeness, and obviously I get them to sign the card, some signed cards, some non-signed cards, so everything's all legit. So I mean, that would then make things a lot easier. I wouldn't have to be doing things, you know, one by one. I mean, that's like long-term vision, but you know, I'm still, you know, I'll still be going away every year. Like, I'm focusing on who to do next year. Obviously, everyone knows, like, you know, 2023, it's a year of uncertainty, I guess, across all markets, like stocks, shares, real estate, collectibles as a whole, like watches, like everything went up in previous years, and a lot of people saying cards are going down, but, you know, in my opinion, I don't think they're going down. I think everything is literally just, like, people need money, so they're selling specific things.
Right. Yeah.
And cards are so easy to sell. They're the easiest thing to sell. Like if you need an extra $100, $200, $500, and you got a card, whack it on eBay, put it on Facebook Marketplace, you can sell it like that. But like selling a couch might be there for a few weeks. Like, you know, it's just the
thing shipping to sell. It. Yep. 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 Well, that's kind of how I got back into cards was I wanted something that was a hobby that I enjoyed that I could, that at least wouldn't be, wouldn't suck all of my money. It would be a chance to make some money back, like you're saying. And after I got back in for a while and started networking with people around the world that listen and want to talk about this stuff, they sort of get tired of the mainstream brands and they are looking for limited edition stuff. They are looking for unique design stuff.
Yeah. And I get like, honestly, I'm like, I know the, and this isn't me to, I don't like to toot my own horn or anything, but like, I don't, there's so much negativity, like on, you just look on social and everything. I'm honestly stunned and amazed at just the positivity I get. Like I rarely get much negativity, which I mean, to be honest, in this world, it probably means you're not doing a good enough job if you're not getting negativity. But yeah, for me, the priority is just like customer support, quality control. And like, you know, I'm there every day. I'm speaking, people still email me thinking like there's a team behind me. It's like, no, it's me. I'm replying to your email. Like I'm sorting out shipping labels. I'm doing everything. Like, and more so that for me, like I do have people helping me, but for me, it's like one of those things. If you need it done right, you do it yourself. Like I've always had that motto, and it's just like, it's not like a trust factor, but I don't know. The more I've done this, I was like, you know what? People are spending a lot of money on these cards. I can't have the wrong cards going out to people. I can't have, you know, all this stuff. So I was like, I just got to do it all myself. Like, and completely fine with that. And I think in the long run, it's the return, my returning customer rate is insane. That's because I think people have a good experience. They get what they pay for. And then also like, I don't really like, you know, Australia's a little bit different to America. I know sports gambling's like just kind of fresh in America, like in terms of like legalization, you know, online. We've had that for 20 years or something in Australia. Like you can bet on anything, live bet, whatever, on your phone. We've had that since I was freaking 14 years old or something. And yeah, for me it's like, oh, I don't know, I've seen so many people like just like, yeah, gambling is not a good thing. Like, I know it's fun and everything, but people, it does destroy lives, relationships, families, all that. So for me, it's like my cards, it's like, no, you buy something, you get what you get. Like I always get people like, oh, you should do packs and boxes and all this stuff. And I was like, I don't know. But then then there's a gambling thing. Then it's like people are buying this to hope to get this. And, you know, maybe occasionally I would do like a little pack or something, but 99.9% of the time it's just like, here, you know, this is a Giannis auto. That's what you get. It's like buying singles, direct for sale. And Panini and Tops and everything do that as well. And, you know, on their online releases. But yeah, for me, it's like, I just rather that. Then everyone's happy. You buy, get what you want and, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and it seems like in the last year, and I know this has always been true, but I think it stands out more and more as the market kind of, I agree with you. I don't think it's going down. I think it's maybe just returning to some sense of normalcy after a lot of the fast money was in and out. But scarcity or rarity or limited number cards are always going to be a draw. There's always going to be a pull to those. And one of the things I'm curious about when you work with the athlete directly, if I'm a player, like I love the idea of working with a designer on my cards. Some of these guys, you know, they collect and spend big money on their own cards.
Yeah.
And so the chance to not just have a beautiful card, but work with the designer on it. I'd love to hear how that's gone for you and how some of the players have responded.
Yeah, it's been awesome. I mean, when I sat down with Allen Iverson, he wanted to keep half the cards himself. He was like, these are the coolest looking cards I've ever signed. He's like, dude, I can tell you I've signed a lot of cards in my lifetime. And he's like, these are the coolest ones I've ever signed before because they've got, he's looking at the details. They've got specific things about me. And he's just like, usually I sign cards and it's like you know, I get it, like my cards, it's a part of a set, but it's like, it's not specific to me. And that's what I was like, that's what I'm trying to do. Like, you know, and he was like, this card here says 4-time scoring champ. He's like, I've never seen a card that says 4-time scoring champ. Why is that something that gets looked over? He's like, only, I can't remember what he said. I think he said only Michael Jordan and Will Chamberlain have more. I think, and I could be wrong. I mean, I doubt it. He's wrong, but I think he said he's got like the third highest or tied third most in NBA history. And he's like, why is this the first card I'm signing of that? And I was like, I don't know. Like, so I thought that's cool. Like getting that. And then even like another experience is like Floyd Mayweather. He like, and every time I do, like if they got a team of people, they want them. And I'm like, well, I'm paying for these. I can like,
right.
I can organize maybe some cards sent out later, but I just got to get these cards back and ship because I got to case them up and get them all sorted first. But yeah, Floyd loved them. He was looking at them and he was just like, these are so cool. These are, again, he was like, I haven't signed cards like these before. This is really cool. And you know, for me, the players have been, the athletes have been really easy to work with. They've been, I think a lot of the younger ones as well, like they're like a lot of them, like, especially in the NBA, you see what they wear. Like,
yeah,
they're out there. Like, I mean, that's kind of their style and, you know, not like my cards are like that, but they're still might be a little bit more loud and a little bit more like you know, visually kind of, they might have more visual elements than the cards they're used to seeing, so they kind of see them and go, this is cool, this is different. And yeah, everyone's kind of been on board. Honestly, like, yeah, there's only one player that said no so far, and that was because I was working with another player before. Everyone's been really good. Like, if we can get the money to work and the deal done, everyone's down with it. So I mean, for me, I feel like I thought it would be harder than it is. Like, maybe like these players, they're like, oh, nah, not interested. But everyone's been really keen and supportive. And it's been, yeah, been fun. And yeah, sitting, honestly, like sitting down and getting these cards signed with the athletes again, it's not, that's for me, that's just so I can control things, get things done properly. Because, you know, sometimes in past signings, like they've signed in the wrong spot or something's gone wrong. And for me, it's like, nah, I just got to be there. I got to get it all done and just get it done right. And then, you know, allows the better chance of the better card. And, cause I'll never do the sticker auto route. That's one thing. You never, you know, talk to me in 50 years time, I'll never make a sticker auto. I'm never doing it. Like, and the sad thing is it's so much more profitable to do sticker autos. I like on card. Like for me, I would never buy a sticker auto myself. I just don't like it visually. And I can't do that to my
card. Would you say it's better to have no autograph at all than to have a sticker auto?
I would say no.
I've heard that debate lately. I'm just saying
I would say sticker autos have their place. Like for example, like let's say someone's unfortunately passed away, but they've got a bunch of sticker autos laying around. It'd be cool to do. Like, what about if there's like a Kobe set in 2 or 3 years' time that's marks like a 10-year anniversary of his 60-point game and there's autographs on it? That would be cool as hell.
That's true.
So I think sticker autos have their place. For me, yeah, I don't know. It's the same, but also I'm the same as like, you know, the patch autos that aren't worn. I feel like I'd rather just no patch. Like, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I was thinking as you're talking about working with these players, some of them, like you said, Iverson, these are the coolest cards I've seen, or how come it's the first one that says this about me? It sounds like they realize, hey, this like, so, like their shoe line or like their clothing line, a card can be an extension of, or a representation of that player. And it is, you know, I don't know how often they either get the chance or even want to speak into how one of their cards is designed. Like, is that a thing, or do you present them and say, hey, here's what I'm thinking? Like, how does that process work? Are any of the players interested in that even?
Yeah. So all the artwork's approved by them before it goes to print. So they're a part of the process for sure, which again, I think that makes it a cooler part. Like, you know, that's not the same with other cards. Like, with other cards in industry, I guess when you have league licensing, they approve the card and then the athlete gets it and they just sign it. That they're not approving the card before. So they're a part of the process in making the card, which for me, it's different. There's actually a little story behind it. And for me, I don't know if it's just me personally, but there's a story behind each deal, every collab, how it's done, you know, how it got, you know, where it got signed. Like, I remember, like, you know, my first one, for example, Jason Tatum, he signed it in the bubble. I FedExed it to him inside the bubble to his hotel room. And this is when they just first got in the bubble. They're locked in their hotel rooms. He can't do anything. No one can go in the hotel room. Someone like opened the door, slid in the box, and then kind of like stood at the door and like took the photos of him signing it. And then he FedExed it back the next day to me. And it was so it went from Australia to Florida, like Disneyland or whatever it was, Disney World. Took 3 days to get there. And then he signed it, and then it took 3 days to get back to me. So it took 7 days total from me getting it to the printers. And when I started mailing out the cards, there was a bunch of people saying these can't be real. Like, we're being told that these players can't sign cards. I'm waiting for rookie redemptions from Tatum. And people were like, not a lot, but there were definitely a few people in my DMs and stuff going, these cannot be real autographs. And I was like, no, but for me, that it, like, same thing happened with Giannis as well. A lot of people thought they were fake. And it was just like, for me, that actually, I take that as a compliment, because I was like, you don't even believe this can be done. And it was done. Like, because they're only saying it because they're like, whatever. They're like, no, there's no way. He could not sign it in the bubble. We're told that. And I was like, no, like, he did. Like,
you got the picture of the guy signing.
I send that. I try not to send too many pictures out, but if someone's ears, like, and I was like, here's a picture. He's signing the cards. Here's a video. Like, you know, there, have a look.
Not that they're entitled to see it, but you've got it.
No. So I do try and share more stuff now, but at the start, I tried not to. I guess I just didn't know, because I was like, well, the big companies never share photos of people signing cards. So I was like, well, maybe there's a reason behind it. So I was like, I won't share them. But now I start to share a little more, because I'm at the signings now. So I guess it's just, I don't know, it's just me documenting it. So
and they don't want you to know when it's the player's mom signing the card or something. Like,
yeah, well, fortunately I haven't had any Lulu, anything like that go down yet.
Yeah, well, you're one of your, like, most recent and I believe most popular has been the Steph Curry series, the champion series of cards that you've done with him. And I don't know, like, how much you want to say about that or how that's gone, but I just think that was obviously a great idea coming out of the Warriors championship and Steph being at the top of the hobby and collectible or investable for the rest of, I mean, the next few generations. I think Steph Curry is a game changer.
Yeah, Steph Curry is, like, in my eyes, Steph Curry could be like what, you know, Jordan is to kids. Jordan was to kids in like the 80s, 90s, the kids now. And like, you know, I think in 30, 40 years time, like, the same thing. It's like, you know, I couldn't afford, you know, a Kobe auto and stuff when I was super young. I could only afford it when I got older. So I feel like a lot of Steph's cards, autographed cards and everything, when people get older, like, he's on that Mount Rushmore sort of thing. Like, he's locked in. He's so he's so popular though. Like, you know, I feel like, you know, just because a regular dude thinks they can be like Steph, like, whereas a LeBron, like, you got to be a physical specimen to be him. You can't be LeBron, where it's like achievable to be Curry. Cause you're like, oh, I could just shoot the ball and he's not that tall.
Totally changed the game. Like, two nights ago, I was at my son's basketball game. So he's 17. Yeah. Right. And we got to watch the junior varsity play and then the varsity. And in warmups, all these guys are chucking up threes. They're shooting threes. There's no more layup line. It's just three, three, three. Wow. And there are guys shooting threes who I know that kid better never not shoot a three in a game.
Oh, yeah.
But they're doing it. And some of the kids are even doing the dribble drills with the two hands, like doing the Steph Curry before the game. But you're absolutely right. And so he's a legacy play.
So I feel like just that alone, like, obviously he's had an amazing career. He's won 4 championships. He might win more. Won awards, he's broken records. So, like, his name's set in stone, but even just that, Again, that's one of the reasons why Iverson's probably a little bit more collectible than what his career gave him, which is like he didn't win championship. He only won one MVP, a couple of scoring titles, but because he kind of like, he was like really, his fashion and he, like just off court, everyone wanted to be Iverson at one point, like just the way he wore his clothes, wore his like baggy jerseys, shorts, all that stuff, like the tattoos, I guess, even at the time were kind of uncommon, where they're common now. But yeah, the Steph thing, the first card I did of Steph was before the 2974, like him breaking the records. I actually did one in 2021 and I just assumed it wouldn't get approved because I just said get him to sign the record breaking card before it happened. So it's pretty cool when the ball went through the basket, the cards dropped on the side. Wow. And they're in and they've been with me for months. So this isn't like you buy something in order, like I've seen it with you buy an auto and it's like, oh, 16 to 20 weeks delivery. And it's just like, nah, it's in my hand already. It's already signed.
You know it's happening. Yeah.
Yeah. It's for me, that was like, and again, that's kind of like, because I'm such a basketball fan, I knew that would be a big moment. So I was happy to kind of invest into that. And the same thing with Steph, you were mentioning the second time for the championship set. I had the idea in April. I was so sure that they were going to win that championship. I wanted to do a championship set. And if they didn't end up winning it, I would have just released like the past championship cards. But I was so sure they were going to win 2022. And it worked out. So I was able to include them in it. And that was pretty cool. Obviously, I didn't drop them the moment they won the championship. None of that crazy stuff. It was it was done on ring night. But it's kind of cool because I did the previous year, I did Giannis championship cards on ring night as well. So it's kind of like a little trend. So I don't know who wins it this year.
That was my next question, Tyson. In fact, I just released a podcast episode here on Hoops and Cards on the top six teams in the East and the West and looking at investable player like superstars on teams that have a chance. But if you have some like magic connection to who's going to win this year, dude, I'd love to hear your picks.
Oh man. Well, as a Lakers fan, it's hard to say this, but it's hard to look past Boston. I don't know. I don't think anyone in the West will win it. I'd say Boston, but it all just comes down to health. At the end of the day, you could pick anyone, and if they're not healthy, you're not going to win. Like, I can't remember the last non-healthy team that won a championship. It may have been decades. A lot of the times in the finals, there's a healthy team versus a non-healthy team, and the healthy team always wins. So I think Boston, maybe I do a Jason Tatum card again. Who knows? Mm-hmm. But how about yourself? What do you think?
Oh, as far as this season, who's going to win? I think it's got to be somebody from the East. And I think if they're healthy, I still love Milwaukee, but Chris Middleton... Yeah. What, you know, when he came back, he played two or three games and then he's on the shelf again. So I think Boston has as good a chance as anybody. And those guys have been there, like they've been to the brink, and they added Malcolm Brogdon, and they've got another year of experience for young guys like Grant Williams and Robert Williams III. Like I think they can do it. And I think Tatum is elite. I don't feel the same about Phoenix. I thought I would coming back this season, and they're just not, they're not improving. They're not adding the right pieces, I don't think.
It feels like they haven't had a full team on the court. Like, it feels like when Booker's out, Chris Paul's in. When Chris Paul's out, Booker's in.
Right.
And then there's like a bunch of just like role players and stuff being out. Like, they just got injuries all year, but I don't know. Yeah, I agree. I don't know who's going to come out of the West. I have no idea.
I tend to move away from teams that have a lot of drama, like the DeAndre Ayton trade rumors and all that stuff last summer, and the incidents with the coach and everything. Brooklyn obviously is on fire. Like, KD and Kyrie are playing, but How long is that going to last, Harmony?
Yeah, it's pretty impressive, though. My pick, it's actually looking okay so far. My pick at the start of the season to come out the West was Pelicans. Uh-huh. I just thought they should have beaten Phoenix last season. Like, they should have won that series. But this year, I don't know. I was hoping that Brandon Ingram and Zion would be more healthy and available. Well, but
dude, CJ McCollum grew up 15 minutes from where I'm sitting right now. He's from Canton Glen Oak High School. And to see him, like, he's 24 points a game, carrying a lot of the Brandon Ingram load while he's out. But I just wonder what they're going to be like if they do get everybody healthy. They could be unstoppable.
I know. They're so deep. And they've got some great role players. They were my pick in the West. And, I mean, they might come good. I think their record's pretty good.
They're fourth in the West right now.
Okay, so not too bad. But they're just going to have to get through without Zion. But Ingram's got to come back. I don't know. They're just going to be healthy. And as you mentioned, Brooklyn, Milwaukee, I mean, I cannot wait for the East playoffs. I think they're going to be amazing. I mean,
Cleveland, here everybody's so pumped about Donovan Mitchell. We were already excited about Darius Garland and Mobley, but then to see a guy that can drop 50, 71 the other night, did you see that?
Insane. I mean, I saw that he had like, what was it, like 54 or something at the end of regulation or something, and I was like, oh, okay. And then, like, I didn't watch the overtime, and then I was like, what the hell, 71? Did it go in like triple overtime or something,
right?
And it was just in single overtime. Like, I assume he scored like every basket.
LeBron James,
why don't you make like a tree and get out of here?
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It's over. Powell's
no.
Get it done. And on the spin and the reverse, the slam by Zion.
All right. Take care now. Bye-bye then.